Welcome to Shitpost. I'm your host, Jared Holt. I'm on the road this month in Chicago, so this episode will sound a little bit different. I'm away from the little makeshift studio slash bunker I've made in my house. I've got Pierre, my little dog, running around, so you might hear some of that. In August, we should be back to the full kind of audio quality you come to expect here, but all that aside, I've got Zach Petruzzo here with me today. He's a reporter from Salon. He spent last weekend at CPAC in Dallas, which was all kinds of crazy. Zach, how's it going, man?
Hey, Jared. Thanks so much for having me on.
Yeah, well, thanks for coming on. It seems like, from what I saw on Twitter, you had a, how should I put it, eventful time at CPAC.
Absolutely. Yeah. Eventful would be a good word to describe it. I'm back in DC safe, but it was quite the weekend in Dallas, Texas.
Yeah, you were not a popular figure there, to say the least. It really kind of reminded me of my time at CPAC throughout the years. You know, I'm on the road right now. My job is a little different than it used to be, so I don't go to stuff like CPAC as often as I used to. But a lot of the video clips I saw of you going around and some of your own experiences, which we'll talk about here in a minute, really reminded me of some of the I guess, less fun times that I've had there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's one of those events where, you know, not only, and I think especially this year, but not only is like the press made out to be the villain, but like, you know, kind of harassment reigns free. And, you know, people that aren't journalists, aren't anything, kind of get their opportunity to go after people like you and I, for reasons that are unclear, or maybe just because they personally want to, but kind of deranged at times, to say the least.
Yeah. So, you know, can you talk a little bit more about that? Because I think, you know, it's easy for people to see clips of what happens at CPAC. Certainly things on the main stage tend to make their way around whenever they're, you know, particularly unhinged or conspiratorial. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm curious your experience. What's it like covering an event like CPAC, which really is kind of the flagship event of the conservative movement? If you're a reporter at a publication that doesn't lean right, like, say, a Breitbart or whatever Glenn Beck's thing, Blaze TV, whatever, mm-hmm. you know, Glenn Beck's thing is.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think this year it was especially, and especially at Dallas, it was especially interesting to cover just because there were kind of these four main tenets that I was looking at throughout the weekend. So not only did conspiracy theories and far-right extremists kind of run free at this CPAC, I think unlike CPACs in the past, but, you know, in many ways, organizers encouraged and let these, you know, groups kind of go about the conference as they please. So we had groups like the Proud Boys was in attendance, and they were offering, quote unquote, personal security for speakers at the conference who were in attendance. You had the founder of the Oath Keepers, Stuart Rhodes, there, who was under FBI investigation. You had white nationalist Groypers, which your audience is probably extremely familiar with, but they are the group that kind of reports to white nationalists and Unite the Right attendee Nicholas Fuentes. And then, of course, you had QAnon and a whole host of other conspiracy theories, you know, including 9/11 trutherism and you know, all types of things from that to Holocaust denial. You had a big grouping of people even wearing like QAnon shirts, which the Trump campaign doesn't even allow at their rallies, right?
Right. Yeah. And it's interesting you say 9/11 trutherism. Maybe this is a topic for another episode, but I think, you know, the fact that we're coming up on the 20th anniversary of 9/11 and that stuff is still around and still showing its face at places like CPAC. You know, when we think about QAnon and sort of where it's going to go from here, I think it kind of speaks to the potential for it to have some staying power, especially because I think 9/11 trutherism has reached audiences larger than or smaller than QAnon, I should say.
Yeah.
You know, I'm curious, you know, before we dive into the nitty gritty here, if we're going to go inverted pyramid style, to use a journalism term, on this episode, this CPAC event, you know, it's always interesting covering these things year after year because you kind of get a firsthand witness to the different evolutions going on within the GOP more broadly. And I'm curious if you had any takeaways. You know, this is not your first rodeo. I think we might have actually met for the first time at a CPAC. So I'm curious what this says to you about kind of where the party is headed or how it may have changed the past couple of years.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think we can look at CPAC almost as it is kind of a bellwether on that of the Republican Party. We can see CPAC as kind of helping not only to inform the way the Republican Party moves, but also kind of a good way to kind of look at who are the big players in the Republican Party. And I would say, you know, the CPACs we attended at National Harbor in Washington, D.C., for example, there were people that were kind of off limits, right? And there were kind of thresholds to CPAC's craziness, if you will. And they used to be, you know, pretty kind of gung-ho on making sure that the bounds were clearly, you know, marked, for example. And I would argue that after January 6th in Orlando, they had a CPAC Orlando, and I believe it was February, I didn't attend. But more recently, this Dallas one this past weekend, I would say there were no lines in the sand. Anything went, anything was allowed. And I just found that to be particularly interesting just because, you know, perhaps it's informing us that the Republican Party is becoming, you know, all more that radicalized and farther right wing.
Yeah. You know, for listeners who aren't familiar, can you elaborate a little bit on what you meant when you said that CPAC, you know, when it's in National Harbor, which is just right across the river from D.C., that there were these sort of lines in the sands or these sort of efforts to kind of rein things in. Can you talk about that, like what you mean by that?
Yeah, absolutely. So like one example is like, for example, the white nationalist Groypers, Nicholas Fuentes' crowd, was kind of quickly kicked out of previous CPACs. And while Nick Fuentes remains kind of banned from the event, you know, at Dallas CPAC, his white nationalist Groypers were kind of roaming free and running free, right? Further, you know, you have Stuart Rhodes in attendance at this past CPAC this past weekend, who, you know, helped in allegedly organizing parts of the January 6th insurrection, right? So you see these, you know, radicalized military groups that are pretty scary groups. And I would even go farther to say there was a video clip posted online on Twitter of a Groyper approaching Stuart Rhodes and saying, hey, you know, we don't like feds or whatever. Kind of funny, but like immediately Stuart Rhodes was like, you know, do you want to take this outside? And, you know, it was like suggesting that they get into like a fist fight, right? So that sort of like no lines in the sand thing was kind of what we were dealing with at CPAC. There were no rules. People were, you know, threatened. I know I was like kind of publicly doxxed. My address was read out to a big crowd at CPAC by an Oath Keeper associate. So, you know, pretty scary stuff. And CPAC, when made aware of these types of things, the threats, you know, I was pushed, you know, nothing occurred. And I think in past years, perhaps, you know, at these more mainstream CPACs, if you will, you know, some of that stuff was like, you know, that's not going to work here type of thing.
Yeah, I think part of that has to do with, you know, who covers these events. I mean, surely places like the New York Times and the Washington Post had sent people out to cover CPAC in Dallas, but maybe it was like one or two people. When CPAC is in D.C., it is kind of in the backyard of a lot of media institutions, or at least boroughs of media institutions. So it's just crawling with press and like very, very high profile and international press, too. So I think maybe part of that pressure comes from just the amount of, you know, high prominence eyeballs, if you will, that are on the event. I want to move on to some of the stories from the scene, because I certainly have plenty of these, plenty of these throughout my time at CPAC. You know, there's the viral clips that go around, the videos that come out. But I feel like every reporter who's been to a couple of these has like some good stories from the ground, or just like weird little quirky things that they saw or happened to them, or conversations they had while at CPAC. And I'm curious if you have any of those from last weekend.
Yeah, no, there was one, you know, unfortunately, the one of the viral clips that was out there was, of course, of white nationalist Nick Fuentes and his Griper army, you know, kind of swarming me and approaching me and kind of bombarding me. And, you know, that video clip went viral, which, you know, whatever. But after that, you know, after the white nationalists had kind of disappeared, and into that later that night, it was really awkward because there was this one lady who continually followed me around, right? So I don't know if she got the idea from, you know, the white nationalists or whatever have you, but it was this older lady. It was a CPAC attendee. She had a CPAC badge. And she just continued to follow me around the entire conference, kind of like stalk me. Super bizarre. And then I went into this bathroom, and she stood literally at the door at CPAC off to the left side of this bathroom door and waited for me to come out. And I was like, geez, this is really bizarre, right? Like some like stalker kind of like just like following me around with a phone camera. Super weird. But like that is like to the extent of like how crazy these attendees were, right?
And CPAC as an organization, I presumably did not a whole lot about that situation, I'm guessing.
Yeah, no, they didn't do much about that. They also didn't do much about an incident that occurred when I was speaking with the MyPillow CEO, Mike Lindell, on Sunday. And one of their attendees decided to get physical with me and literally, you know, put her hands on me, grabbed me by the back of the coat, and began pushing me. And of course, you know, you tell CPAC security or whatever have you, and nothing happens. You tell, you know, the communications folks, and, you know, they do nothing. So it's really interesting this year, you know, and as to exactly why, I think it goes back to your point, which is a good one, that, yeah, there weren't a lot of eyeballs. When you look at the publications that were covering it, you know, a lot of people, including like the New York Times, didn't dispatch a reporter to the event. You know, they dispatched a photographer. So it was really outside the coverage of, you know, many in the media.
So another part of CPAC that I've always really enjoyed is going to the vendor hall, because that is where, as one may say, shit really pops off. It seems like anybody willing to fork over the money can set up a booth in this vendor hall. Mm-hmm. There's always merch. I remember there was like a group that I came across at a CPAC one year that was like, I'm going to butcher it, but it was like libertarians in favor of global warming, people who acknowledge that global warming is real, but were like, no, this is good, actually. And I just got a huge kick out of that.
Yeah, that's funny.
Because I am a sadistic weirdo who just, to cope, takes pleasure in the awful, awful things in this world. That's one of my favorite parts of CPAC. Mm-hmm. What's the merch hall and the vendor hall? What did that match sort of the other energy of the conference and sort of anything goes?
Yeah, no, I would say that the exhibition hall in Dallas was pretty low key compared to what we normally see kind of in Washington, D.C. at National Harbor. Of course, you had your staples. You had, you know, your Trumpy Bear rival Deplora Bear there, you know, the guy selling the stuffed bear. You had, you know, Mike Lindell set up with his Lindell TV booth. You had people selling QAnon shirts and other like Trump memorabilia type of stuff. And then you had, which I thought this was interesting, you had a lot of social up and coming like right wing social media platforms that like people have never heard of before, like trying to get people to sign up for their new apps, like attempts to become the new Parler or the new Gab. But much smaller.
That's really bizarre, because even Parler and Gab compared to like the mainstream platforms aren't much. So it's interesting that people are, you know, competing to be essentially a second or third tier media platform.
It's wild.
Were there any particularly unique ones? Or I feel like most of the ones I see are just like they're trying to clone something else, but they don't have the money to put actual development into it. So as soon as it hits any sort of scale, it just breaks. Was there anything novel at least?
No, I think you got it. I mean, most of these apps are ones like, I think Clout Hub was there, which is, you know, kind of
with Jeff Brain, baby. That's the CEO of that company. Best named CEO of all time. They do have that going for them.
Yeah, but that's about it. I mean, them and this other one called like Free Spear or something of that nature, they were also there. And look, they're trying to compete in an industry where, you know, now Getter is there, Parler, Gab. You know, you have all these right-wing social media sites and none of them have really panned out. So they're all kind of scraping for something. And they were all there. And I think one of the big issues with them is just the fact that a lot of their backends like are just like poorly built, like, you know, kind of like right-wingers can't do tech or something type of issue. But I think that was pretty apparent that most of the ones that were released there aren't really going to work out.
Yeah, it's really interesting that they're still trying to do this. If they had, and I almost hesitate to say this because I feel like it's a little bit of like materializing prophecy at some point, but if they had any wits, they would just pick one and centralize. But hopefully none of them are listening to that. I like them all scattered out, quite frankly. So we talked about a little bit of what was on the ground, you know, the exhibition hall. As far as the substance, the meat and potatoes of CPAC, if you will, you know, of course, this happened on a weekend that, you know, very shortly followed the 6-month anniversary of the Capitol riot. So as far as what was being said on the main stage, you know, I'm certain that January 6th came up, it's kind of impossible not to talk about it even to this day. From what, you know, sort of the mainstream speakers were saying, you know, what was kind of the vibe in the room regarding January 6th? Were there any sort of narratives that came out of there that kind of caught your attention?
Yeah, I mean, I spoke with a numerous amount of attendees as well, kind of from all backgrounds and all kind of walks of life. I think there were a lot of different people there, not only just people from Texas, but, you know, people from across the country that, you know, had kind of supported Trump. And one of the themes I found that was kind of interesting was in relation to like kind of this big lie was that many people there, you know, some of the speakers seemed like almost proud that January 6th happened. There was this sense of like, you know, it was done, you know, it was done for a reason type of thing almost. And there was this.
Really, that's kind of a bit shocking to hear. What gave you the impression that that was the sentiment? Like, what kind of things were they saying about it?
Yeah, no, there were attendees who Salon spoke with, at least, that were.
Oh, right. Okay. Attendees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were attendees, but there were also, of course, there were also speakers, for example, like Alan West, right? Like in his remarks, he made a reference to like building up this like quote unquote conservative army, right? And there were these comments that like you could definitely like kind of smell that of like the violence in the room, if you will. And you could smell this kind of continual, you know, desire to, you know, harm political enemies. And while people might think that's a little too far, I would say, look, you know, the Oath Keepers that were there, like, you know, threatened to kill myself, a reporter, right? So it's like there was definitely a sense of, you know, free reign and a message of violence many times over by attendees. And I think, you know, some of the speakers were kind of giving the nod and the wink to, you know, Republican control, authoritarianism, at any, you know, any means necessary.
So on that note, our big, beautiful boy, Donald Trump, was there on the final day and gave a speech. Mm-hmm. It's always kind of interesting to see the reception that his speeches are getting nowadays, because he doesn't have the same kind of media, social, political, well, maybe not political, but definitely social and media dominance that he had, you know, since he's been deplatformed. It's, you know, funny how that works. But, you know, to the crowd at CPAC when Trump is up on the stage doing his thing, what was the reception there? I mean, I think it would be almost kind of naive to suggest that Trump is losing control of the party. You know, I think there was a lot of conversations, and, you know, I partook in some of these conversations about kind of where the party goes after Trump. Mm-hmm. But it seems at least my gut take now is that it doesn't really seem to have gone anywhere. It seems to have just kind of stuck with him. And I don't know what would have to happen if he would have to, you know, pass away or get terribly sick or something like that and be rendered incapable to be president again. But I saw there was a straw poll. They always do this at CPAC. And people wanted Trump to be the 2024 nominee. So, I mean, I'm just curious more broadly what the reception to Trump felt like, you know, in the room, and also kind of what you think that reception might say about, you know, whether or not the party is moving on from Trump.
Yeah, no, I'll take the straw poll first. There was a straw poll conducted on Sunday. The results were given. And the straw poll, one of the questions was along the lines of if Trump were to run against like DeSantis, or, you know, that those are kind of the two main players right now, at least in 2024. Trump had close to 70% and DeSantis had close to 20%. And, you know, it kind of shows, in addition to Trump having a 98% approval rating, according to CPAC attendees from his, you know, his first term, you know, it kind of showed that they're not moving away from Trump, right? I mean, Trump is really still in charge of the Republican Party. And not only is Trump in charge of the Republican Party, Trump is fully in control of the attendees' minds, if you will, right? I mean, the attendees, their entire being is invested into Donald Trump. Not just their being in terms of their own beliefs being invested, but they're financially invested. Salon spoke with attendees that, you know, had given money, hundreds of dollars, to voter fraud, you know, causes and organizations and groups that, you know, tout that Trump is going to be reinstated at some point, right? And, you know, it was just kind of more confirmation that Trump is still very much in charge.
Wow. And CPAC is not a cheap thing to attend either, I should remind listeners. So just kind of, you know, step back, you know, are there any other kind of standout moments that I might not have asked you about yet?
You know, there was one thing that really shocked me, because I've been covering Mike Lindell now for close to 6 months.
So this is the Mike, for people who don't know, Mike Lindell is the CEO of MyPillow, a former crack addict turned businessman who has been financing to the tune of God knows how much money, all kinds of fringe media, and mm-hmm. has been repeatedly claiming that Trump will be reinstated back into office later this year. Go on, Jack.
Yes, no, absolutely. He actually told me, funny enough, on how much he's invested. He told me the other day he spent $10 million alone on some of the election fraud claims and stuff like that. And $10 million is a lot of money. But anyways, I've been covering Mike for a long time, and I thought I've seen all the craziness. I thought, you know, August Trump reinstatement, I thought that was bonkers, right? I mean, the idea, the evidence you have to have, and I don't even think that's constitutionally allowable, right? So, but at CPAC, it went a step further. There was a gentleman in attendance who Salon spoke with, who said that there was evidence to suggest that President Donald Trump will be reinstated within days, not years. There was a card going around on social media that suggests, you know, that was from this attendee who suggested that through a use, due to the fact that there's some underground Democratic cabal of Satan worshiping pedophiles, along with evidence that intertwines 9/11 trutherism with QAnon and JFK Jr. and where Joe Biden was born, all that ties to, you know, Joe Biden not being president within like 7 days, and President Donald Trump being reinstated as president and basically having Nancy Pelosi go mute in the mouth because she's a witch. And that was just completely bonkers to me, but it was just more conspiratorial stuff that I think at previous CPACs, organizers would have been like, dude, kick rocks. But instead, this guy was there giving out, hundreds of pamphlets to attendees.
So just to be clear, you weren't convinced by all of that, Zach?
I was not. No, it was.
He had a pamphlet, Zach.
Yeah, no, I know. He had a pamphlet and all, and he had these pictures that showed the Illuminati, and it had these random letters and numbers, and had pictures of Joe Biden comparing them with like JFK Jr. And one of the funny things was I asked him like, "So you believe in QAnon?" And he's like, "Oh my gosh, no!" And he gets all upset. And I'm like, wait, dude, like, come on. No, you believe in QAnon because you're telling me JFK Jr. is still alive. You know what I mean? And he's like, oh, no, Vincent Fusca, who is a gentleman who QAnon believers think is JFK Jr. like reincarnated or something to that effect. This guy said that he's a false flag, just like 9/11. And I was like, wait, what?
Yeah, this guy's deep in it. I feel, just from what you've told me, this sounds like the kind of guy who's so deep into conspiracy theories that other conspiracy theories start becoming conspiracy theories, like the government set up QAnon to destroy patriots or something like that. That's when it gets really deep. But yeah, it's kind of surprising that after being presented all that overwhelming evidence, you just write it off like that. I guess it's just another fake news thing. Anyway, I'm just giving you a hard time. So, zooming out, bird's eye view as we're coming up on time here. For non-CPAC type people, because I imagine the people that listen to this show, if they know what's good for them, will not be attending a thing like CPAC of their own volition or curiosity. Walking away from this event, for the run-of-the-mill person, what is important to understand about what happened at this year's, or not this year's, but last weekend's CPAC, excuse me?
Well, I think the big takeaway for me, at least, is that this is kind of a bellwether for the Republican Party and shows that, look, January 6th, had not only a deep impact on the Republican Party, but, the Republican Party continues to move further and further and further to the right. And it's not only, just the extremists that run about, which Matt Schlapp says, who cares to? That's not the only reason. But it's because, so many of the attendees are believing in these baseless conspiracy theories, right? And it's really turned into this party, which once, CPAC was kind of founded by Ronald Reagan and this mainstream conservatism, which is really losing in the battle to this right-wing populism, this far right-wing, white nationalism sympathy party. And, the Republican Party continues to move that way and embrace all those elements. So I think the big takeaway is, look, come 2022, come the midterms, you're going to see a continually further radicalized Republican Party.
So I've been talking with Zach Petrizzo, the reporter for Salon, doing amazing work. Zach, I want to thank you for coming on the show this week. And I also want to thank you for putting up with sort of the lo-fi version of shitpost. I promise I'll have you on in the future where I have access to my nice microphones and editing and everything. But it is still shitpost, so I have the final question that every guest gets, and it's for you. What's your favorite thing on the internet right now?
Ooh, this is a good one. I like this. I'm a big fan right now, at least, covering some of the claims regarding the 2020 election. I would say Mike Lindell is probably my favorite thing on the internet. His website frankspeech.com, which is a whole trove of fun from 2020 election conspiracy theories to discounted My Pillows to the good old classic Giza dream sheets.
Yeah, it's hard for me. It's been kind of amazing to see which right-wing media figures continue to, you know, plug the MyPillow promo code even after Mike Lindell is like, Trump is coming back into office, the cabal, you know, is like just completely flying off the rocker, and people are just like, well, have you tried the Egyptian cotton sheets that MyPillow sells with the discount code shitpost? You can get, oh my god, I should see if Mike Lindell wants to sponsor the show.
We should call him up. We should.
Yeah. All right. Well, Zach, if people are interested in the kind of reporting that you're doing, which if listeners, if you like this show, you'll like what Zach's up to. Where can people find your work and keep tabs on you online?
Absolutely. They can follow me on Twitter at ZTPetrizzo, P-E-T-R-I-Z-Z-O. And then they can, of course, check out Salon. And we have, you know, a lot of stuff that, you know, I think your listeners would really enjoy, from Turning Point USA, fun stuff, to CPAC stuff, to all things right-wing media.
Well, I'll include links to that in the description of this episode, so you can go into your podcast player of choice, or if you're viewing it on the Substack, it'll be right down there. Go check it out. It's great work, as always. I've been talking with Zach Petrizzo. He rules. He's a great reporter. Check out his work. But that's going to do it for Shitpost this week. It's been July 13th, 2021. If you like this show, you like what you hear, you can go to our Substack page, shtpost.substack.com, and subscribers get access to a bi-weekly newsletter that goes out in between episodes. So if you like the audio product, you might like the written product too, and you can get it while also helping keep the show afloat. Zach, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.